Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the pre-close trading update call for Wood Group. My name is Latoya, and I will be your operator for today. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time you require operator assistance, please press star followed by zero, and an operator will be happy to assist you. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to the Wood Group CFO, David Kemp. Please proceed, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, and thanks for joining our 2016 trading update call. Andrew Rose from Investor Relations is also with me this morning. As usual, take questions at the end of the call after running through this morning's release. Firstly, we anticipate full-year performance to be in line with current market expectations. Consensus EBITDA for 2016 is $370 million, and adjusted earnings per share is $0.649. We expect performance to be weighted to the second half, in line with previous years and previous guidance. Our balance sheet remains strong, and we still intend to increase the dividend for 2016 by a double-digit percentage. Oil and gas markets remain challenging in 2016. Lower oil prices have endured, and activity has fallen across the sector. In response, we have focused on what we could control, managed utilization, and we have significantly reduced our overhead cost base. Although the pace of saving has slowed, our overhead costs will be around $220 million lower than the 2014 position. We have worked alongside customers to improve efficiency, and we have refined our operating structure to enhance customer delivery. More specifically, in response to customer requirements, we moved to becoming an organization defined by service provision. Following the half-year presentation and the update we gave in November on our revised reporting segments, you'll now be familiar with our Asset Lifecycle Solutions and Specialist Technical Solutions operating model, and the operations and maintenance and project and modifications aggregation of the service lines below this. The flexibility of our model, our market-leading position, and the impact of bolt-on M&A in 2015 have been key to our financial performance in 2016. In particular, our efforts on cost reduction have significantly mitigated the margin pressure resulting from the tough pricing environments and reduced volumes. In real terms, this has meant further tough decisions, which have directly impacted our people, with current headcount reducing a further 5% since the end of June. We spent much of 2016 positioning our business for a prolonged period of lower oil prices. The market continues to present significant challenges for our business, and these challenges are likely to persist during 2017. However, we do see indications of modest recovery in selected areas, including U.S. shale, offshore upstream, and our automation business. Overall, we're confident that our focus on delivering value through our Asset Lifecycle Solutions and Specialist Technical Solutions, together with our customer relationships, global footprint, and strong financial footing, position us well. The Asset Lifecycle Solutions West business will contribute around 40% of the 2016 group revenues. Our operation and maintenance services comprise around 70% of revenues in ALCS West. Activity is up in 2015 due to the impact of the Infinity and Telstra acquisitions completed in 2015, offsetting lower underlying activity. Our U.S. onshore shale business has been significantly impacted but remains the largest contributor to this service line, generating over $600 million of revenue. We are encouraged by the positive rig count movement in the second half of 2016, although we've yet to see any significant improvement in our activity. However, we're confident that our differentiated capability in the Permian, Eagle Ford, Marcellus and Utica, and Bakken basins will benefit us as the market recovers. We're seeing a good contribution from our work in the Gulf Coast petrochemical markets, through the Infinity acquisition completed in December 2015, our U.S. onshore maintenance business has been less affected than onshore. Activity in East Canada has grown, and we continue to work on our hookup and commissioning scope on the Hebron topsides, and we recently secured a 5-year contract on the Hibernia platform. Our project and modifications business comprised around 30% of the LCS West revenue. U.S. onshore work, including the ETC Dakota Access Pipeline, the Flint Hills Refinery Project, and activity on process plants and transmission pipelines more generally, will be down on 2015. A number of these projects are concluding, including ETC, which was the largest project in our Western Projects and Mods business in 2016. Looking forward, we continue to see strong competitive pressure in the downstream part of our business and less onshore pipeline opportunities. Overall, activity in greenfield offshore work has been robust. Major activity included a detailed design on Stampede for Hess, Peregrine and Phase 2 for Statoil, and feed and detailed scope for Noble Leviathan, which recently commenced, feed and detailed engineering for BP South Pass, and ongoing feed activity for Anadarko Shenandoah. Greenfield offshore upstream work is one of the areas where we do feel more positive looking ahead, and encouragingly we see further projects which have the potential to proceed. The LCS East business will contribute around 50% of 2016 group revenues. Operations and maintenance activities in the East comprised around 65% of revenues. We faced a tough market in the North Sea for operations and maintenance work, which is down on 2015. We're maintaining our leading position, having renewed the vast majority of contracts over the last 18 months, which secures access to work as volumes recover. We're also well placed to partner with new entrants into the basin. Our duty holder scope operating the CAP pipeline and terminal for Antinel infrastructure is progressing well, and we secured the operating partner role for Ancala Midstream on assets acquired from Apache in November. It's worth noting that as a US dollar reporter with a significant portion of UK denominated earnings, the movement in average exchange rates in 2016 versus 2015 does provide a headwind to reported 2016 EBITDA. Elsewhere, activity levels have increased on our Exxon contracts in Papua New Guinea, and in Australia, we recently renewed our contract with Melbourne Water. We also recently secured a 5-year managed services scope from Hess Malaysia for their offshore facilities in the North Malay Basin. In our turbine-related operations and maintenance activity, we have seen weaker than expected performance in our Ethos Energy joint venture, with reductions in major maintenance and equipment sales. Although significant improvement efforts are underway, expectations of near-term performance in Ethos Energy are likely to lead to further exceptional non-cash impairments of the carrying value of our investment in Ethos at the year-end. We're actively pursuing our longer-term strategic options. In projects and modifications work, we have now completed the later stage follow-on engineering and construction support scope on Det Norsk's Ivar Aasen. In the North Sea, we have seen a significant fall in brownfield modifications and upgrade activity under existing contracts. This is an area where we continue to believe we could see an early improvement in our activity as customers sanction previously deferred non-essential work. Activity on the Saudi Aramco contracts has remained robust, and we renewed our 5-year frame agreement in October. Work on our recently secured contracts with Exxon in Iraq and BP in Azerbaijan is ongoing, although the pace of activity has been slower than originally anticipated. In Kazakhstan, we saw strong activity on our work with NCOC, and during the year we also benefited from the commercial closeout of projects. Our specialist technical solutions business will contribute around 10% of group revenues. We've seen significantly reduced subsea services activity in line with the overall market. We are working on a number of early stage tiebacks and verification scopes, but there are minimal large projects coming to market. Relationships with our customers remain positive, and we see continued support for a solution-independent model, evidenced by a number of master service agreements, including Statoil, Apache, BP, and Chevron. Within our technology offering, we saw growth in our smart asset integrity services. Our automation activity has seen growth in 2016. We were formally awarded the $700 million main automation contractor scope for Chevron's Tengiz expansion project in 2016. And this was followed up with a $40 million award from ExxonMobil Chemical to provide main automation contractor services for Texas polyethylene plant following the completion of the FEED work. Automation is an area where we see a positive outlook for 2017. Our balance sheet remains strong. DSO management remains very much in focus, but has lengthened slightly as customers have taken longer to pay. Ongoing dividends, organic investment, and M&A remain our preferred uses of cash. There is no change to our appetite or focus on M&A, but opportunities have been more scarce than anticipated, and we have remained very disciplined as regards potential targets. As regards the dividend, our intention remains to increase the dividend for 2016 by a double-digit percentage. To summarize, firstly, we anticipate full-year 2016 financial performance in line with current market expectations. Looking ahead, oil and gas markets continue to present significant challenges for our business, which are likely to persist during 2017. With that, I'll now take any questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to pose an audio question, please press star 1 on your phone. Clearly record your name, followed by the hash key. Please ensure your mute feature is disabled prior to recording your name. Again, if you'd like to pose an audio question, please press star 1 on your phone. Clearly record your name, followed by the hash key. Your first question comes from?
Let's go to Dagi.
Please proceed.
Morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my question.
Morning.
Questions. When you guys do your strategic planning and you think 3-4 years out, and you know, especially from a workforce management perspective, your business is now about 30% down top line from peak. Where do you see as recovery potential from here? Do you ever see going back to those levels? I'm thinking in the context of efficiency we've seen both in shale and you know, in offshore, and the project projects you're getting signed, et cetera. But what do you think is the magnitude of recovery we could expect if, you know, the current prices take hold and we can move gradually to 60, 65, which consensus seems to expect? And my second question is around shale, which you said is now generating $600 million. A similar question there, do you ever see us going back to a billion that I think you guys were generating at peak in the context of fewer pads, you know, less wells, but more production? You know, given your exposure in shale, the mix, the 60-20-20 mix you've talked about before, how do you think that plays out on recovery? Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to take the U.S. shale question first. I think, obviously, you know, we grew a very significant business from almost nothing to $1 billion in 2014. I think, as I said in the update, we're over $600 million just now. In terms of looking forward, we feel we're really well positioned in all of the key basins, and we've got a relatively low market share still in the activities that we provide. So we do see, you know, long-term potential in those markets. I think in terms of margins, 2014 was obviously a very hot year. At that point, we talked about our margins being over 10%. You know, since that, our margins have fallen, and they're between 5 and 10% now. Well, probably in the short term, we don't see any recovery in our margin capability. But we do see the opportunity to grow our business, and As I said, you know, we've been encouraged by the macro indicators, whether it's CapEx surveys, whether it's the rig count, or, you know, the underlying oil price itself and break-evens. So I think we do, you know, in the longer term, we do have the potential to grow that business beyond where we were in 2014, partially because we had such a low market share and we've built out our capability across the basins. In terms of looking forward 3-4 years for, you know, headcount planning and offshore, I think that's an incredibly hard, you know, question to answer. I think, you know, when we look at where we are just now, we see a great deal of uncertainty, and we've obviously not given out guidance for 2017. It's quite difficult then to give out guidance for 3-4 years hence. What we have seen in, you know, as a flag in the offshore market, we've seen an uptick in terms of activity levels, but also our guys have performed really well in winning the work that's out there. And we see some further opportunities coming in the near term. Whether we get to the level of man hours in 3-4 years' time is really difficult to say.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful.
Your next question comes from?
Philip Lindsay.
Thanks, Christy.
Hi, Philip.
Yeah. Yeah, good morning, gents. I've just got two questions, please. Just thinking about some of the moving parts, I mean, clearly, onshore pipeline and some of the refinery work that you've been busy on this year, looks like it might be down next year. But then maybe offsetting that, you know, offshore engineering looks good, automation looks positive as well. I suppose, can you just help us understand the current visibility of that part of your business? And also try and help us understand the relative size of the opportunities that you're currently chasing or that you're flagging, you know, you might be able to secure in the near term. That's the first question.
Okay. So I think it is a bit of a nuanced picture in our projects and modifications business. Particularly the ones you talked about are largely based in the West. So as I said, if we look at offshore, we think we've secured decent levels of work through the projects talked about in Noble Leviathan. We're going into detailed design. Statoil Peregrino, we've been working detailed design through the year. Obviously, we've been working on Hess Stampede as well. And then BP South Pass into detailed engineering as well. And Anadarko, Shenandoah, we're in FEED. So we feel we've got a good selection of projects there. We think we're well positioned for a couple of more significant projects that are kicking about, and you know, seeing these in the press as well. I think there is a nuancing to that, and there is a but to that. You know, in our onshore pipelines business, you know, we worked on ETC Dakota Access Pipeline for the last few years, and that's been our biggest project in the West this year, and has been significant in prior years as well. You know, that's coming to an end, and when we look forward, we see some opportunities, not of the same scale as ETC, but we see a lower market generally. There's been less permitting of pipelines over the last couple of years. So that we just see less opportunities in that market for us. In terms of the downstream side, a similar story in that we've been working on the Flint Hills refinery project for a couple of years. Again, it's been a great project for us, a significant project. That is coming to a natural conclusion. There is less refinery work out there just now. There's more petrochemical work. And what we've found over this year, we're not as well placed in the petrochemical work from an engineering perspective as we need to be. And so that's something we're working very, very hard on.
Okay. Just a quick follow-up on that before I move to the second question. Would that be an area that you may be focusing on for M&A, or is that something that you can chase organically? You just need to get the right teams in place.
It's more organically. You know, there's different things we need to do there. We need to get the right teams in place, and we need to get the right demonstration of our capabilities. If you remember, we bought Infinity as well, which is a downstream construction company and also provides turnarounds and maintenance. So what we've been working on is building that modest size EPC capability as well. So marrying our engineering offering together with the construction capability we have in Infinity. And so we see a couple of opportunities in that space as well. So that's enhanced our market outlook.
Okay, that's helpful. And then second question, I suppose looking at the sort of brownfield and modification side of the business, clearly Norway, US Gulf, look like they've got a potential to grow. Certainly there's a number of opportunities out there that you could be chasing. But, you know, UK North Sea potentially still looks quite challenged. I suppose I'm just trying to get a sense for, you know, does 17 for UK North Sea look any worse than 16 has been at this juncture?
I think I probably agree with your comments, actually. I think in terms of looking forward to the North Sea, you know, first of all, what I would say, you know, our maintenance side of our business has probably been down about 10% in 16. Our modifications business has been down really significantly. And so there's been really significant deferral of that. I think as we sit just now, we feel we're into a bottoming out phase, but we're not seeing any pickup in activity. I think then, you know, when you look at 17 versus a comparison to 16, it's the rate of descent versus the rate of ascent. And, you know, we've not given out guidance for 17, but that is the challenge. Just now, we're seeing a bottoming out, but we still think that's going to be a really difficult market for us in 17.
Okay, understood. Thanks very much, guys, and well done.
Your next question comes from
Davis Powell.
Please proceed.
Hi, David.
Hi, morning. A couple of questions from me. Firstly, on M&A, just wondering, given where the current share price is currently, how that makes you consider use of shares versus cash in any deals that you might undertake. The second question is, in terms of margin profile, could you elaborate a little bit in terms of how much of the 2016 revenue is associated with workloads won in kind of 2014, so decent margin, versus how much of, you know, where we are going into 2017, how much of the revenue is likely to have been won in 2014?
Okay, firstly in the M&A, really our strategy around M&A is unchanged. You know, we've still got the same appetite. We've still got the same resources in place to pursue that, and I think, this is a real differentiator, I think, for us. We've still got the capability to do it through our strong balance sheets. You know, our real prime objective has been more in that bolt-on space, and so, you know, using shares for that hasn't made any sense. Typically, you know, we've got a very strong balance sheet. We can finance that internally. You know, we continue to look at, you know, bigger acquisitions, but they're not plan A for us. And, you know, really our strategy is around that bolt-on. In terms of margin profile, you know, the majority of our work is work that now has either been won or renegotiated. And so, you know, just thinking through our business in the West, typically the projects that were won and two, you know, pre-crisis, if you like, or pre the downturn, were ETC, Stampede, and obviously Flint Hills Resources. You know, combined in 2016, these would be over $100 million of revenues.
Yeah.
I think one important point to pick out, so, and I'm sure you picked this out in the statement, so, although the revenues are at that level, you know, as you get to the end of projects, you obviously get to the commercial closeout. And, you know, obviously what we flagged is we've benefited in 2016 from the commercial closeout. And that's been over $20 million of EBITDA for us.
Okay. I was actually going to ask on that. Should we kind of see that as a one-off, or is it likely that you could have to repeat that? Because I think you had the same in 2015, positive commercial closeouts helping.
Yeah, we did. I think it's been higher in 2016. Can we expect it again next year? It's difficult to say. You know, we tend to take a prudent approach. You know, this is typically provisioning and contingencies that we have and relies on good execution of projects. So it's really difficult to say, to tell you the truth, but definitely it's been a good tailwind for us this year, and you know, that's been helpful.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
Your next question comes from
Jimmy Mattis.
Please proceed.
Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, morning. Thank you for the question. Just trying to rationalize something. So you talk about, I'm sorry if I'm not using the correct words that you use, but you know about sort of near-term offshore opportunities and how, again, this is my phrase, but optimistic about that. But yet, brownfield modifications, you know, don't really see much of an out or any improvement in the outlook there. I'm just trying to rationalize what that difference in view is based upon in that, yeah, I guess you said at the outset you'd expect the brownfield modifications to pick up first. So where does that confidence come from that one is going to outperform the other at this point, or just trying to understand that slight nuance? Thank you.
Sure, Jimmy. So I think in the offshore space, it's based on the fact that we've won work and we think we're well positioned. So there's a certainty about that. In terms of looking forward in the modification space, I think it is more uncertain, and that's what we'd flag. I think, you know, we talked about it in August, and, you know, we've mentioned it again. We would expect maintenance and modifications work to recover earlier in the cycle. I think, you know, when we look across the globe, you know, we've won significant modifications contracts in Azerbaijan for BP of Baku, and, you know, we've got good contracts in Trinidad. We've got some opportunities in the US that we think we're well positioned for. When we look at the UK, I guess the nuancing is we've not seen any uptick in maintenance and modifications activity. And we've seen, you know, that work for us has fallen 50-60% in terms of modifications work, 16 versus 15. So we've seen a really steep decline, and we've not seen any uptick. Clearly the North Sea is a mature basin that still has significant challenges, and we would expect that to cover as our customers' cash flow recovers. But we're not seeing it just now. So it's more grounded, and we're not seeing any uptick just now.
And then the question around, you talk about the cost savings, the benefit you're providing or the rate at which you're extracting costs from the business. But then turning it from the other side, where are you focusing your investments, or where are you focusing business development opportunities to try and drive the returns higher at this point in the cycle? Is there a particular something where, beyond from a top-line revenue growth perspective, but actually from a sort of margins perspective, where you see greater opportunity in any other sector or subsector segment?
Okay, I think in terms of just that margin question, again, we're probably in a similar place to we were in August. In most of our markets, we don't see the opportunity to improve pricing in the short term. I think where our margin growth is going to come in the short term is greater volumes and maintaining our cost discipline. And so we're really focused on that. You know, we've had to work incredibly hard to take $220 million out of our overhead cost base. The last thing we want to do is refloat that as activity levels pick up. And, you know, we've been investing in structural programs around, you know, ERPs, and, you know, we'll have probably about 70% of our revenue, I think, on an ERP by the end of this year. We've been investing in shared services, you know, across our back office functions. And we've also been doing some outsourcing, principally around IT. So we've had to work really hard for those cost savings. So maintaining discipline around those costs is our biggest short-term margin opportunity.
And then just lastly, where do you think you've made the most notable market share gains?
I think I would point again to, offshore, and particularly around that topside market. There has been a pickup in activity in 2016 to 2015, but our guys have done really well in winning work. And, as I said, we think we're well positioned for a couple of other opportunities as well. So, that's been a real highlight for us. The other one I would flag is automation. And obviously, winning the TCO project, which is our largest ever automation scope, $700 million, that was a real highlight in 2016 for us.
Okay. Super. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from?
Rob Fleming.
Please proceed.
Hi, Rob.
Hi, Davis. Good morning, gentlemen. Just two questions from me, hopefully relatively straightforward. The first one is the number of integrated seeds by some of your competitors continues to grow. I think Technip and FMC now talking about 16, 17, Schlumberger, double digit. I know you mentioned in your opening remarks that there is a role for an independent engineer, and I cannot disagree with that. Having said that, are you worried by the gaining traction of these integrated fleets and the fact that at least one of them has now actually turned into an EPC project? And the second one, just very quickly, David, on bolt-on M&A. With oil prices being higher and maybe activity looking to turn around in some markets, is there a chance that the valuations of these of your potential targets start to look a little bit unattractive, and that maybe limits the amount of M&A you can do? Thank you.
Okay. First of all, in terms of subsea, I think am I worried? Rob, if you knew me, I worry about everything. So yes, we're thoughtful around where we are in terms of the subsea market. In terms of the number of feeds, I don't have the number to hand of feeds that we're working on just now. I remember at one stage we'd won 5 in 1 month, and we hadn't disclosed that. I think the issue with these feeds is they're really quite small, and so the bigger worry I have just now is the prospects in subsea in 17 and the larger prospects. So I think, as we said, we think there is a place for an independent solution provider like us. Our customers tell us there's a place. We're encouraged with the contracts we sign. But the fundamental problem for us and some of the integrated providers is there's just not a lot of work. So there's a lack of clear evidence as to whether the market's shifting in any dramatic way or not. In terms of bolt-on M&A, as I said, we still got that same appetite. We're working on a few projects just now that might or might not come to fruition. We're going through diligence. Are we overly worried about multiples increasing in the short term? It's probably not a major worry. If we look back to 2014, 2013, we were still finding, good targets and multiples that were attractive to us. So we're quite good at maintaining our discipline around what we buy, and it has to make sense for us. And, clearly the multiple needs to reflect the growth prospects of any business.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and I hope you guys have a great Christmas.
Thanks yourself, Rob.
Your next question comes from?
Michael Ray.
Please go free.
Hi, Michael.
Yeah, hi, morning. Thanks very much. Actually, just one left from my side, which is very straightforward. Where do you see net debt at the year-end this year? Thanks.
We're probably going to be about that 0.7, 0.8 times. December is traditionally a fairly significant month for us in terms of cash receipts, and we're obviously going through that just now. So we expect to be in that 0.7, 0.8 times net debt EBITDA.
Okay, and I think you mentioned in the preamble that there's just been a bit of a stretching out in terms of outstanding working capital. Is there anything new over the past 6 months, or would you associate that with just the natural behaviour at this point in the cycle?
More the latter, more the natural behaviour. I think as I've talked about a couple of times, we brought in new credit control procedures at the start, or end of 2015, I think it was, and touch wood, we've had no significant bad debt, from a liquidity perspective. At the start of the year, we had a couple of smaller ones in the US Gulf, but they were pretty modest in the scheme of things. So we've not had any significant liquidity events from our customers. We've seen a stretching of DSO. Some of that is, you could perhaps attribute to the climate. One of our significant clients changed their terms from 30 to 60 days. Some of it is just, the ebb and flow of processes. Sometimes as people change processes, you can get some holdups in payments.
Okay, and was that an IOC that changed the terms?
It's just one of our significant customers, that's probably as far as I'd like to go.
Okay, that's great. Hope you have a great break. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Your next question comes from?
James Hubbard.
Please proceed.
Hi, James.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. Just two questions. The first is, you've done all these many acquisitions over the years, and I'm wondering to what extent that $200 million of cost savings reflects integrating those businesses, working together in a more efficient way. Obviously, there's the headline head count cuts, but I'm wondering, is there still upside there for you in terms of cost savings and even winning more business just from having the innumerable small acquisitions you've done over the last 10, 15 years, perhaps working together in a more, one team, one dream mentality, or is that not a problem? That's never been an issue. And then the second question is simply, what is the carrying value of Ethos at the moment, just to put a kind of upper limit on what that non-cash impairment will be?
Sure. So let me answer the Ethos question. So the carrying value is between 180 and 190 million just now. And, just to give some context to that, last year I think Ethos did it was under 10 million of EBITDA. And so we expect it to be slightly behind that. So the impairment is triggered around not meeting growth projections. But we do think it will be a significant impairment. And, we're working very hard on two fronts of that. One, the Ethos management, the Ethos board are focused on a range of activities to improve Ethos Energy. As a shareholder, we're actively pursuing our strategic options with our partner, Siemens. In terms of your first question around sources of cost savings, undoubtedly, Wood Group has made over 50 acquisitions since IPO and has been incredibly successful in that route. One of the areas we focus more is around integrating those acquisitions. Part of that has been, getting them onto consistent ERPs, and that's been over the last 2-3 years, and moving back office activities into shared service centres, and selectively outsourcing some of our IT activities. So you're right. The acquisition gave us an opportunity to reduce costs by bringing things together in a more integrated fashion. Quite a large chunk of the savings, though, were activity-based as well.
Okay, thank you.
There are no further questions.
Okay, if there's no further questions, probably the last thing to do is to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and hope you have a good break. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation in today's conference. This concludes the call. You may now all disconnect. Have a wonderful day.